thankfully, even though it's very complex mathematically, just like the special theory, it can be done in thought experiments. The special theory of relativity, which modifies time and solves his light beam chasing problem, is done with a thought experiment that's simply Einstein imagining a fast moving train, just like the trains going into the station at the Bern train station, past the clocks. And he's saying, how would you define something being simultaneous? That's what he's doing for a living at the patent clerk. Say, well, that means that two things that are very distant, if they happen, if somebody's standing exactly in between, they see them at the same time because the light gets that person at the exact same time. That's an operational definition, he says, of being simultaneous. He says, well, what happens if you're moving? Suppose you're in a moving train and lightning strikes both ends. Suppose the guy on the platform says those strikes were simultaneous. But the woman in a fast-moving train would be closer to the first strike by the time the light beam hits and say, oh no, the first one happened a nanosecond before the one behind. And the theory of relativity simply says neither one of them is correct, neither one of them is wrong, all motion is relative, but time changes depending on your state of motion. And for a 16-year-old chasing a light beam, it means that, yeah, you can try to catch up with the speed of light, but that light beam will still go 186,000 miles a second. You'll still see it that fast, but time will slow down for you. Now, it's very complicated in some ways, but it's just a thought experiment. And it's something that all the other physicists had sort of couldn't quite get. They thought it was weird philosophy. But it turns out to be right when you test it. But that theory only works for constant velocity motion. So he wants to do a general theory of relativity. 10 years later, 1915, he's saying, what happens if you're in accelerated motion? Does it still work? Because we all know constant velocity, if you're in a gliding train, you sometimes don't know you're in motion. You can pour a cup of coffee, bounce a ball, shine a flashlight, and you might think the platform's in motion next year. And for all you know, it's true. You're standing still and the earth is rotating and the platform is moving or something. But when you're in accelerated motion, you know it. You get thrown back to the seat, the coffee sloshes out of the cup, that sort of thing. So he says, how do I try to get accelerated motion into it? So he does another thought experiment. He says, suppose I'm in an enclosed chamber, like an elevator with no windows. And suppose I'm in a gravitational field, like the surface of the Earth, and I'm standing in this enclosed chamber. What do I feel? I feel my feet being pressed to the floor. What happens when I take something out of my pocket and let it go? It falls at an accelerated rate. Galileo tells us that. Now suppose I'm somewhere in outer space and there's no gravity. Totally out in outer space, no gravitational field, but I'm in the enclosed chamber. And it's accelerating upward. What am I going to feel? My feet will be pressed to the floor. Take something out of my pocket and drop it, it falls to the floor at an accelerated rate. In fact, he calls it the equivalence principle. All the things you'd feel in an accelerated chamber going without gravity are totally equivalent to a force of gravity. There's no way to tell them apart. Now, by the way, everybody since Galileo sort of had known this, but they hadn't thought about it. Galileo with the Leaning Tower of Pisa, Newton with the apple, they've all discovered that inertial mass is equivalent to gravitational mass. If you think back long and hard enough to your senior physics, you remember your teacher telling you that the amount of mass when you push something to get it to accelerate, that's called inertial mass, is always equal, but nobody knew why, to the gravitational mass. The tug it gets pulled on from the Earth or something in a gravitational field. Einstein says why? Because acceleration is equivalent to gravity. And from that he says that gravity is not some strange things like Newton said, which is a force operating between two objects, mysterious force at a distance, where the big object and another object here would tug each other instantly. Because he says his theory of relativity says nothing can happen faster than the speed of light, so it's got to be something else. So Einstein says what gravity is simply that objects, masses, curve the fabric of space. Once again, sort of difficult, he does it as a thought experiment. He says, imagine a piece of fabric. And for our sake, let's imagine it's a trampoline fabric. You take a bowling ball and you roll it on the fabric. What happens? The fabric curves. And as it rolls, the fabric curves. And suppose you roll a big bowling ball slowly and it's curving the fabric, and then you roll a few billiard balls behind it. What happens? They go like this and they start curving towards the bowling ball. Why? Not because the bowling ball has some mysterious attraction, but because it's curved the fabric and they roll down towards the bowling ball. That's it in two dimensions. That's all the curvature of the fabric of space means. But if you're Einstein, you can picture it in three dimensions, which is a massive object curves not just a two-dimensional fabric, but all of space and cause things to move towards it. In fact, if you're really Einstein, you can imagine it in four dimensions because the special theory says that space and time are connected. So it's really four dimensions of space-time that get curved. And all it says is that massive gravity is what tells massive objects how to curve space, and how curved space tells massive objects how to move. Everybody thinks, wow, and they have no idea what to make of this. Einstein, this is 1915. People think it's elegant, beautiful, and it may be just totally wacky. Einstein said, well, here's an experiment. If you say E equals MC squared, it means mass, energy has mass. It means a light beam going in a big gravitational field will curve. Gravity will curve light. You go, wow, okay, how do we know that? He says, well, I'll even calculate it for you. The light from a distant star as it goes right next to the sun will curve by 1.7 arc seconds, tiny bit. Now you can't look at the sun and see the light from a distant star curving because the sun's too bright. So they have to wait until 1919 for the full solar eclipse to happen. And the World War I is just ending, so a Quaker Englishman named Sir Arthur Eddington decides to test this theory and say, is it right? They send out an expedition to Principe in the South Atlantic and off the coast of Brazil and Africa to photograph the light from, photograph distant stars and to see during the eclipse when they're right behind the stars, not where they're supposed to be. Are they 1.7 seconds off? And it takes a long time to get all the photographic plates back to London and compare them. But in November of 1919, they call a meeting of the Royal Academy. Einstein's still in Berlin. He can't travel yet. England and Germany are not exactly friends. But Arthur Eddington stands up, points to the picture of Sir Isaac Newton at the Royal Academy and says, forgive us, Sir Isaac, we've revised your universe, in an amazing conference that they do. Telegram goes back to Einstein telling him he's right. He shows it to a graduate student, a woman. And she says, oh, that's totally amazing, you know, and says, why, I'm not surprised. He says, yeah, but what would you have thought if it had turned out you were wrong? And he said, I would have felt sorry for the good Lord because the theory is correct. Let me borrow the book if I may for a second.